We read in Galatians 2:20 these words, "The Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." Could he give more? He gave himself. Could he make a greater sacrifice? He laid down his life for me. It was no easy matter for God to give his Son to be our Savior. In the first year of the American Civil War, a widowed mother in a Kentucky town gave her only son up to her country. So great was her love for the Union that she said to him, "Go, my son, though you are my only son and child, my joy and support, I give you freely." That was a great sacrifice, Dr. Pentecost said. I was then in the same regiment, and just before we started for the camp at the front, all our friends came out to bid us goodbye. That widowed mother stood by her son, her arms about him, all her deep mother love looking out of her eyes up into his face. Then the bugle sounded, "Prepare to mount." She clung to him with a closer embrace, and in another moment, the second bugle sounded, "Mount." The boy gently unclasped his mother's arms from about his neck and sprang to his saddle. But the mother lay at his feet in the swoon. Ah, it was costing her sore to part with her only son. Some of you perhaps know what it has cost, as has cost you, to give son, husband, brother, and betrothed. But could that mother have foreseen what I saw a few days afterwards, said Dr. Pentecost? That only son, smitten down by a fragment of a burst shell that went crashing through his brain, and the next moment trampled underfoot by the red iron hoof of war. But the battle surged back and forth over the spot where he fell. Could she have seen her boy buried in a nameless grave? I doubt if she could or would have given her only son. The cost would have been too great. Could the loyal mothers, wives, and sisters have foreseen all, they would have held back the sacrifice many made. They gave with the chances in their favor that their dear ones would come back covered with glory. But when God gave his own son, he knew what would be the result. He knew that from his manger cradle to the cross he would be set upon by the devil, that the very people he came to save would never rest until they had hanged him on the cross. He foresaw those hours of agony in the garden, where he sweat, as it were, great drops of blood. He foresaw the trial before Pilate, the shameful buffeting, the cruel pillar to which he was tied, and the Roman lash laid over his back, till his holy and sinless flesh hung like ribbons there. He foresaw the cross with its nails crashing through hands and feet, the pierced side, the thorn-covered and pierced brow. Yes, God knew that. In the bitterest hour of Christ's sacrificial agony, he must withdraw himself and forsake his son. Think you not that it cost the Father something to hear that well-beloved son cry out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Why did the Father forsake his own son when he was gladly doing his Father's will? Why? Because he was dying under the curse of the law in the place of the sinner, and so must suffer as a sinner, though he knew no sin. When I think of this, and that blood was shed for the redemption of my sins, I say too, it is precious blood. The Son of God paid the last farthing of our redemptive price. O my soul, and this for thee. Precious blood, precious Son of God, how great was and is thy love to sinners. Have you trusted in the blood? Have you life eternal through the precious blood of Christ, his death on Calvary? O wonder of all wonders, theme of all themes, mystery of all mysteries, glory of all glories, song of all songs, that God should give his only Son, and that only Son should die for me. His death was twofold. First, Godward, that the perfect revelation of God in all his love and grace may be made known to us sinners as the God of salvation. And second, that we poor, lost, ruined, guilty, defiled, and helpless sinners may be eternally saved, counted righteous in his sight, and soon to share the eternal glory of being with and like Christ forever. You may exhaust time, strength, thoughts, and words, but you can scarcely touch the boundary line of the immeasurable worth of the precious blood of Christ. It hides all man's guilt from the all-searching eye of God. It bears the law's whole curse. It drains the cup of threatened woe. The death of Christ is the fulfillment of the long line of prophecy, the divine teaching of each slain lamb of the Old Testament. It is the ransom equivalent to countless souls. The death of Christ baffles and destroys Satan and his works. It is the wisdom, love, grace, and power of God. It is the wonder of angels. It is the life, joy, and peace of the redeemed here below, the endless song of all the saints in glory above. It builds God's highest throne and crowns him with its brightest diadem as the God of love and the God of salvation, blessing poor guilty sinners with all the untold glories of his eternal redemption. Well may we sing, "Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift." Will you accept God's gift or will you reject it? Not long ago, the people who lived in a certain district in the city of Coventry, England, were startled by loud voices in the streets, followed by violent knocks at their doors. You remember, Coventry was one of the cities severely bombed by the Germans. Something had gone wrong with the gasworks. An explosion was feared, and men were sent to warn the folks in the immediate neighborhood so that they might escape on the zone of danger. Our messages over this broadcast come to you on a similar errand. It brings you a warning of impending danger. It knocks at the door of your heart and appeals to you to seek shelter from the peril that threatens your soul. Our messages speak not only of the danger of sin and of judgment, but bring you glad tidings, tidings of salvation, of peace and lasting joy. If your peril is great, there is a great salvation provided for you. If your need is urgent, there is an ever-ready Savior who waits to bless you. It is much to be regretted that any heart should remain closed when the Savior himself knocks at the door. What irreparable loss is theirs who will not pull back the bolt and string their heart's door widely open. Listen to his words. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him and he with me." What a wonderful invitation. Do not imagine it is for you to knock at the door of mercy as though it needed to be broken down, as if it were closed against you and God were unwilling to open it. That door, the door of mercy, stands wide open. The door that needs opening is the door of the sinner's heart, your heart. God grant that this little message may not be in vain, but cause me of you now, right now, to open your heart's door and bid him enter while you may. Will you say right now, "The Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me, I have him, he is mine, and I am his, and we are one forever. By the grace of God, I can say he is mine, and I am his." What about you?